Welcome to Couch Chats with Corey and Courtney, a podcast about getting local Kansas City artists on the couch to chat. Hello, 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 and welcome to Couch Chats with Corey and Courtney.
Hello.
I'm Corey.
I'm Courtney.
And today on the show, we have one of my best friends, Ray. Hello, Ray.
Hello, how are you both doing?
We are so good. It is a sexy voice Tuesday morning now when we are recording.
Just in the air.
Yeah. Last night, Matthew and my husband and I were driving around, and I was like, the moon pollen is just killing me right now.
Well, and it's also rehearsals.
It is.
That does it, too. So you get in late, you don't have time to recover.
I know. First question I ask everyone is, from your perspective, how the hell did you get here today? How do you know us?
Well, I first met Corey when we were doing My Fair Lady. He was the assistant director, and I was doing Alfred P. Doolittle for the
Leawood Stage
for the Leawood Stage Company. I think it's the second time I did it. The first time I did Doolittle, it was in the actual Pygmalion by George Bernard Shaw, the non-musical.
Yeah.
And then I got to do him with the musical version. And then, of course, Courtney through the
Arts
Asylum.
I was like, I don't know. Again, it's one of those where, like, who the hell knows? I feel as though we've had, like, 10 guests on here where I'm like, I don't know if we've ever met. But we just are always in the same space.
We know each other, but exactly. We don't know. Was there a moment?
And right. Social media, a lot of times, I think that not only this podcast, but social media makes us feel as if we know people.
Yeah.
Like, a lot better.
Well, you see pictures of them all the time on Facebook and Instagram and stuff. And so, and then if you're connected with somebody else that are friends, you see their pictures all the time. Like I see the couch chat picture
every
all
week.
The time.
I believe that there are a significant sect of human beings who have no idea who I am unless I'm with you. but are like, oh my God, I love you when we're together, because I'm like, oh right, you know who I am, but only because of the pictures.
So you're an attachment
exactly,
to Corey.
Which is probably,
that's not a good thing. No.
Like a cancer? Is that what you just said?
You can get shots for that.
Yeah.
Stay vaccinated, everyone, I guess. If there's any anti-vaxxers listening, anyway.
Right, just stop listening.
So I really kind of got to know Ray inside of My Fair Lady because there was a few times that Kevin Bogan either couldn't be there because Wednesdays he has choir rehearsals or whatever, or I was able to kind of direct, you know, or
well, and several times you were taking the scenes that I was doing because he was working with Eliza and Henry.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I walked over, and I was like, well, I really like your shirt. Can I take a picture with you? And that started, you know, kind of, I believe, a hell of a friendship, you know, in that one moment. Because I don't think from that day, I haven't talked to you every day.
Well, yes, at least every morning we text, if nothing else.
Yeah, and so we started, like, the Ray's Rehearsal shirts, and I sort of fell in love with Ray very quickly, and it was a very easy friendship to sort of forge.
Yeah.
And now he's part of the Good Morning Club. God bless him.
Well, and technically has already made an appearance on Couch Chats inadvertently via Rob McGee's shirt.
I saw that. That shirt was done when I was working in the Red Barn Theater down in Branson. This is pre-commercial Branson.
Yeah.
This is when it was just a two-lane road. And the only shows were the Red Barn Theater, the Shepherd of the Hills, and then there was one other theater company that was down there, and that was it.
We totally could have sold that merchandise.
So that was back in the late 70s, and I had my 70s porn mustache on. And if you look at if you look at that shirt real closely, I'm not wearing anything above the waist in the picture.
Speaking of Rami, how did you and Ron McGee meet?
Ron and I actually choreographed him in his first show after he graduated from high school in Independence. It was Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Can you imagine?
And he was Benjamin.
Yes, he was.
And, you know, big, huge, skinny, tall Benjamin. It was great. And I choreographed that show as well as being Joseph. And that was where I first met him. And then, of course, when he started Late Night Theater, I was in the very first production of Late Night Theater, which was Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds.
And that's kind of a famous role for you.
Jessica Tandy.
Yeah.
And, I could go on and on about things from that. We've done that particular show four times.
Yeah. Feel free to drop any anecdotes you'd like about that.
Well, I will say one thing. It's because all of the other people in the cast were of Ron's age group, and I was the old person in the show. I'm always the old person in the show. I decided to make Jessica play her as straight, you should pardon the expression, as possible, because everybody else had all these
well, that will be the humor.
Crazy yeah. things going on. And Robert Butler, who was reviewing shows at the time, even mentioned in his review that and Ray Ettinger played Jessica Tandy as the rock around which all of this craziness happened. And I went, that's exactly what I was going for.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it gave everybody else a chance then to be as crazy as they wanted to be because there was always this sort of solid centerpiece.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. And was this, did you start doing theater after you got out of the military? Because you were in the military?
Oh, no. I did my very first full-length play.
I like pulling, like, secrets out so I can be like, hey. Yeah.
I've been performing in theater for 67 years.
But you're only 68 years old.
No, I'm 39. anybody of my generation will know the Jack Benny 39 joke. No, when
the two kids in the room are like, yeah.
Yeah. I did my very first show when I was four. Because I signed up in kindergarten to do the talent show. Mm-hmm. And I didn't tell my parents that I was going to do it until the night of the show. And I went on stage and sang Sing a Song of Sixpence. And I've always been little for my age anyway. And so this little bitty person came out on stage and I could hear the whole audience. My very first time on stage, I heard as I walked out, oh. And I'm going, oh, I love this.
Yeah, that's addictive.
I did my very first full-length play when I was eight, just 4 years later. I was a pioneer boy who was captured by the Indians. Mm-hmm. And that started it.
Right.
And so I've been doing it solid. When I was going to school in England, we even rewrote the parts a little bit to explain my American accent.
Wow. That's cool.
I have done things. And, of course, I learned the English accent so I could do Shakespeare and things like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you're living in England, going to school, you have to do Shakespeare. That's true. There's no way around that.
I think that would be so cool to like study abroad. I've always thought that.
I always wanted to study abroad, but she never would let me.
Hey, it's not even 9 a.m. yet.
Well, I did get to go back in 86 and study at the Royal Shakespeare Company in their international summer school. With guest artist, I get to drop a few names. Jeremy Irons was the guest artist that summer.
I'm going to drop another one of your names for you in a little while. You did Annie with Rue McClanahan.
Yes,
well.
I did.
And she was Miss Hannigan, and you were her kind of sidekick during that whole process, and that was at the Muni, correct?
We put it up at the Muni, and then it toured. Starlight and the Muni were part of an outdoor theater chain at that time. And so we toured the show, but we actually put the show up at the Muni.
Yeah, that was awesome. What year was that?
Oh, don't ask me years. I have what I call old man memory. Things that happened years and years ago seem like yesterday, and the stuff that happened yesterday I can't remember.
No,
so,
no,
what did you do yesterday?
I mowed the lawn trying to avoid the weather, and we started rehearsals for 42nd Street up in Gladstone.
That's amazing. So Ray and I met during My Fair Lady, and then I cast him as my Cladwell in Urinetown. And then most recently, he sort of directed and cast me in Drunk Shakespeare's Macbeth Toy that we did, and that was last Friday, and wasn't that a whirlwind of a...
Yeah,
experience.
Well, back to old man memory, I can't believe it was just 3 days ago.
Yeah.
It's true.
But, yeah.
I mean, we did that in two rehearsals and barely anything.
Like, yeah, well, and we never actually got all the way through the show.
I only ran that show one time, and that was... Yeah.
Because of the way the rehearsals went, when we were doing the blocking rehearsal... It's unheard of to block an entire show in one rehearsal.
In one rehearsal.
And Shakespeare at that. While we did it, we blocked a scene and then ran the scene. We blocked a scene and ran the scene, but we started to run out of time, so we blocked the scenes but didn't run them. So the last half of Act Two never got run. And then in the rehearsal, the other rehearsal we had was the night of the
show. Right before the show.
We also ran out of time about halfway through Act Two, and we never ran the last few scenes, which are the fights.
Yeah.
Right.
And Macbeth's death. And
I chopped my head. I got my head chopped off with no rehearsal. But that was, we did that with.
But you were drunk.
Yeah, sort of. I was talking with people about it, like, definitely Act One, because I had to drink four shots in a row. Like, I definitely felt that I almost think that all of the shots and stuff should take place in Act One. Mm-hmm. Because then we're all sort of, like, sloppy and drunk, but not, like, falling on the floor, unless you're one blonde who was in the show. But that was what was cool. Like, it really was probably one of the scariest things I've ever done. Yeah. You know, in just because I'm so much more personally organized than that.
You really have to be willing to let yourself go and experience something in a different way.
Yeah.
But I will say that I think it was fun for the audience to watch the progression. I appreciated the fact that it looked like you were trying to do real Shakespeare in the first act as it went. But then you could see all the actors totally falling apart by the second act. And
I think the audience really enjoyed, and what a great house. Like, it was a big house. Like,
oh, it was packed.
I kept being like, how the hell are all of you here? Like, it was just crazy. Right.
First, all the roads are flooded, so yeah. How did you get here physically?
And our sort of leader, Morgan Daly, who is ironically the one who was standing in our office that day and been like, I recognize you,
from
Couch
Chats.
She ended up getting a really cool opportunity, and she had to go literally jump in a car to run, I can't remember where.
To the Quad Cities.
Yeah, to the Quad Cities to do Holiday Inn, which is a musical.
Right, at Cirque 21.
That they literally, I think, opened in 5 days or something.
Yeah.
She had to learn it all.
Yeah, she was filling in for somebody that they had lost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it just happened. She had done one of those auditions that they have here in the Midwest. To get your name into all the various theaters, especially for the summer shows.
And that, so she had to drop that, and she sort of, like, put it on social media, and then our good friend Sarah Jetter ended up having to step in to be the Lady Macbeth, and that just added a whole new fun variable to that night, you know?
Yeah, and talk about jumping in. She had no rehearsal.
I had one. Sarah Crow had two. I had one and a half. Sarah Jetter had zero.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
She had Morgan's script where we had written all the blocking and everything, and so she was doing it completely cold.
Wow. That was,
which was wonderful. She did a great job.
And I thought all eight of us were, like, doing, I mean, we just did Macbeth with eight people. Like, that was insane.
And, you know, we're looking ahead to doing more of them, and it would be the same, you know, situation with only eight actors trying to cover all. If you know Shakespeare at all,
right,
you know that none of his shows have a small cast.
No.
They are all huge
and
casts.
And what a hell of a one to start with. You know, we sort of all were talking about that. We couldn't have done Romeo and Juliet, where we at least know what the hell we're saying.
Somebody kind of knows that the way.
Yeah. So that was cool. I definitely, you know, and now that I'm through it, I think I could handle it again.
Yeah.
I could approach it differently, but as Sarah Crow, my friend who ended up coming up and playing Banquo in it, I thought that our humor that night was coming from how serious we were still trying to keep it.
Exactly.
Like,
that's
what
it's supposed to be.
Yeah, so the more that we tried to keep it on the rails, the funnier I think it got whenever we had a blonde girl seriously, like, almost passing out.
Because, right.
But she was probably the most entertaining part of the show.
And watching her try to change costumes, you know, it was just a costume piece.
Right.
Like for the witch, they threw a shawl over their heads. For one of the lords, it was a piece across like a
sash kind
a
of
a sash across the front, a Miss America sash kind of a thing. And watching them try to change costumes was hilarious in itself.
Yeah, what an interesting concept.
That is fun.
Yeah.
That's super fun.
I will also say that there is a company that has published hour-long versions. The show was cut down in the script, so it wasn't the full 2 hour.
But we still got that Porter scene, though.
But, oh, we added the Porter scene back in, and that was...
You were so good in that, because I had never seen you do that scene, and all of a sudden you're spitting water on me right next to me, and I'm like, this is fucking hilarious, guys!
Well, see, in my one piece of irony as the director, the only character in the show that is supposed to be drunk was played by the only actor who was sober.
When was the last time you had a sip of alcohol, or have you ever drank?
Oh, I tried it when I was in the Navy and younger. I just don't like the taste of alcohol. Yeah. Wine, yeah. My sister loves a nice little glass of wine with dinner and stuff. I think it's like drinking dirt.
Yes.
You and Courtney have that in common. Courtney does not drink either.
Oh, don't like wine.
No, she doesn't drink.
Oh, you don't drink. No, the taste of alcohol. And I'm going, well, I guess I could do like a screwdriver.
Yeah, that's what I did drink when I was a drinker.
Yeah, it covers the taste. But I'm going, why? Mm-hmm. I don't need it. I have never needed to release my inhibitions.
No. You also... you once a year do a show with the Young Matrons in Independence, Missouri as well. So tell us a little bit about that.
I have done 9 shows with them. When I was hired, I write their show and then I direct the show. And the Young Matrons is, well, it's a little bit of a misnomer because most of them are older ladies. Mm-hmm. But they've been doing children's theater in the community for, I want to say 59 years, I think that's right. Last year we lost one day due to the snow and the weather, but even with that lost day, we had over 4,000 kids that saw the show in the week.
How many the year before when there wasn't a snow day?
We had nearly 5,000.
Yeah. I mean, I just think that is so, it's another bragging point of mine that I'm like, my friend Ray writes it. Kids show that the Young Matrons put on, and like 6,000 people come and see this.
I remember doing like read because the Young Matrons house thing that was at the bottom.
Oh, the tour.
They moved.
Yes.
Yeah. I actually was married in that building, but then also like when I was a kid because I grew up right there. I remember going and doing like readings with them.
Mm-hmm.
But then they moved it somewhere onto UMKC campus. Is that right? They
picked would be the Kansas City Young Matrons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, each of the communities, I think, has a group.
How many ladies do you have in your group?
I don't know how many are in the whole group. We vary with the theater group, the ones who do the children's theater. And generally, we have about 30 that are involved in one way or another with that. Plus, then other ladies who come in and help usher and take care of things in the house.
It's a pretty polished evening. I've seen the last 3 years, Treasure Chest, then this past year was... Wait, you had one?
I'm waiting to see if you know.
No, hold on, Treasure Chest, then you had the Fairy Tales that were the second year where we went with the three bears and like...
That was the Little Red Hen.
Yeah,
it was actually the... But she went to visit all the different fairy tales.
Yeah, and that was kick-ass. And then this past year, we had Maleficent and the Wicked Queen's sort of like...
From Snow White. It was Snow White and Sleeping Beauty. I love mashing shows together.
Mm-hmm. And I love any time that you can throw a Disney theme in there. And I really thought, probably thematically, the previous 2 years were pretty, you know, awesome. But this one, this past year, the one with Maleficent and the Evil Queen, touched base about bullying and really, like, the effects that sometimes that can take place and what happens. And I thought your message this last year was pretty cool. The way that you sort of described and really sort of showed the kids probably coming to that show how just a simple name-calling in a lunchroom, you know, can end up maybe being why you become Maleficent, essentially. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just thought that was kick-ass.
So. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah. And are you allowed to disclose this year's yet, or do we have to keep that secret?
I'm in the process of writing it. I will say the name of it is going to be The Wizard of Toyland.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously sort of based on The Wizard of Oz, but with toys.
With toys.
And I will say one of my favorite moments in it is the Munchkins are no longer Munchkins. I've wanted to do one for a long time where the ladies get to dress as dolls or toys and things like that, which is why this one sort of came up. And so it'll be dollies that they're all dressed up instead of munchkins. And the head, Glenda the Good Witch, is a dolly. Pardon? and where they live is not Munchkin Land, but Dollywood Land.
Oh my god. So, I can't wait. And that show usually takes... You guys have a free performance usually in the month of March, correct?
It's the first Thursday evening in March. It's a free performance at William Chrisman High School. And the public is more than welcome.
I mean, you know, this... I don't know if this should be a term, but, like, it is definitely a Corey, like, supported, like, thing. Like, I think people should, if they are around, get a chance to go and, like, watch it. I mean, it's...
Well, and it lets you see...
It can't be free theater, and it's kind of good, you know? I mean...
Well, and it also lets you see what the ladies are presenting to the kids, because for... Of those 5,000 kids to come in, 90% of them have never seen live theater. They've only seen movies and TV. Mm-hmm. And they probably will never get the chance to see live theater unless this has sparked some interest in them, hopefully, that they'll want to go as they get older and go visit other places and maybe become a theater person themselves when they get to high school.
Right. Because
we perform for first and second graders, basically.
Oh, can you imagine those little faces?
I guess.
My God. Because you have those little faces. Courtney, actually, she is our... in 2019, she officially became our director of education. So she's in that same sort of boat. And we talk about sometimes, you know, like the kids that we get to take to the rep or whatever. And that is like only time that some of them...
Well, and it's, you know, for us, we are very hyper-exposed. You know, I mean, I could go see a show a day if I wanted to in any given week.
That's
just our lives. We're in it, you know. But it's so amazing to then be able to come out and watch it through the eyes of people who have no idea what we do. You know, it gets really hard. I always said to my husband that he kind of ruined theater for me, in the best possible way, that, like, I go in and it's very hard to just, like, sit down and watch a show and not be like, what's wrong with that like you? What's happening with that set piece? Whatever. I mean, you know, that you can't really fully just immerse yourself in it anymore because you're too aware of what's happening.
But I think that's sometimes my testament on if it is even, like, exceptional theater. Mm-hmm. It's because I'm walking in there and I'm almost wanting to see the failure
in
some capacity. Mm-hmm. And whenever I can be completely immersed and even be lost for a moment or two, I'm like, that's the art.
I don't remember. When was the last time you were able to do that? Like, even with the best possible show, I feel like I don't get... I mean, maybe it's just because I
had two amazing moments in Curious Sentinel here at the Arts Asylum. Good. Like, I mean, I'm going to tell you all, if you did not get a chance to see that, that was good work that took place in Kansas City. And I would have put that up against a lot of theater.
Yes.
I saw. Yeah. You know. And you know what? I'm going to say, like, the last show we took the kids to, Pride and Prejudice, like, there was a couple of moments that I just completely cared 100% for what was taking place.
I felt like that during African Schoolgirls. Amazing show. Yeah, there was never a point that, I mean, outside of, like, hysterically laughing at my friend's son costumes, like, where when she came out that first time, I was like, girl, what are you wearing? because I know everyone on that stage pretty well. So there were some moments that I was definitely like, that's a crazy costume you got on show.
When we saw Sweeney Todd, though, a group of kids had driven 3 or 4 hours or something to drive there, and it was the first time they had ever seen a play and ever been in a theater. Mm-hmm. Like, because
and what a show.
Yeah.
Well, and it was pretty good, but they just talked about that their performance space was the high school auditorium. Mm-hmm. You know, a cafeteria where... Mm-hmm.
But I will say, I remember my grandnephew was in, he was Tom Sawyer, I think it was, and they did the most amazing thing I would love to do sometime. They were in their school auditorium, but they had two pieces of cardboard that they had folded together and taped at the back so it was hinged, and it lifted up like a pop-up book and became the graveyard.
Cool.
And I went, oh my
God. You're like, Lord, that's how you do it.
Yep.
Doing it in a small school cafeteria like that, there's so many amazing ways you can
And you are a creative artist, you know, Ray. Like, you, I definitely think after seeing your shows and stuff like that, you figure out how to give the most bang for your buck. You know, of it. Like, you really use, like, your periactoids and things like that so well that you, there's actually scenes. Like, you have more set than I do sometimes in my full musicals that I have here.
Well, one of the things I try to do is to be not only a director for the Young Matron shows and other shows, but to also be, I was an educator for 31 years. So you never get away from that.
No. What school
Once
did
a teacher,
you teach
always a teacher. I taught mostly at William Chrisman High School. But so with the ladies, I'm always trying to give them, every year I try to do something new with the production value of either the sets or the costumes or something else. Like one year we did The Shoemaker and the Elves, and I turned the elves into West Side Story gangs. And it was because one gang was red and the other was blue and they couldn't get along. And so it was sort of Romeo and Juliet. Mm-hmm. Also was, like I say, I like to mash up shows. But, you know, so that was a costume one. One year we did periactoids. Another year we did cloth flats that were hung on wires so we could just pull them across the stage.
And then one year you had a ship on stage.
Yeah, we had a whole pirate ship on stage.
Mm-hmm. For a while we had that set, you know, that set diorama in our collab.
We did, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yep. Here. Because we have, you know, high school students take classes from us and they learn. This is kind of a tangent. Tell our listeners about last Friday and the Operation Impact coordinating.
Yes. So we have a group. We provide the both visual and performing arts classes for Crossroads Charter Schools, the Prep Academy. So that's, we've got 9th and 10th graders right now. Last year we started the program with just a group of 35 ninth graders who kind of founded the high school. And we had them last year through quite a bit of, last year was a tumultuous school year. We had the Vegas shooting, we had the Parkland shooting, and when our students did the National School Walkout, their school at that point was still housed within an office building, and the office security of the building called the police on them. And so they marched straight to City Hall, as opposed to going to Barney House, which is where the rest of the charter schools were going. excuse me. And so they started a group called Team Impact, that is a completely student-led group, to talk to other students about what they're going through as students. So last year they did a piece on school shootings, and this year they wrote a piece about teen suicide. So they performed that here on Friday, and then again yesterday at their school. It's a super cool, I'd say, you know, we got probably 35 minutes worth of work out of them. We did it as a stage reading. They're actually going to keep workshopping it.
And they wrote that themselves, correct?
They did. Yeah, they wrote the entirety of it themselves. I had the opportunity to go in and kind of work with them for the final 2 weeks before Katie Gilchrist is their regular teacher. and so it's a group of, I'd say there's maybe 12 of them that do all the research. They did the costumes, they did everything. They just have a teacher advisor on staff that is able to answer questions and, you know, help them get like concessions and things like that, because they were trying to raise money. But I think the goal is that they want to continue this team as they move on. We'll have juniors next year.
I can't believe, like, we are literally growing with this high school.
It's amazing. Well, I can't believe we have juniors, because I still look at them as, like, my little freshmen, and that's not their story anymore. So we wrap up that program tomorrow. We'll have our final class with them
Their last class is tomorrow.
I mean, they go to school through next week to finish off the year, since we had all the snow days ever. But we end with them tomorrow, and then we'll pick back up, and the Team Impact will work. I think they want to present this as a fully staged version in the fall or winter of their junior year, and then we're going to do a fully staged production with them yet. I do not know what that show is yet, but
yeah,
it's an amazing group of kids.
I love it. Mm-hmm. You know,
That's fantastic.
You're changing the lives of the next generation. You know what that's like, right? And all of a sudden, you take on those responsibilities of being like, wow, like, we are their theater teacher. You know, I mean, I remember all of my theater teachers. And so the idea is that maybe they're going to remember us forever is...
Well, you really don't know how many lives you've touched. It's like with the young matrons shows that we do. Out of those 5,000 kids... Mm-hmm. You know, you may only really touch in a long-term way 1 or 2%, but my lordy, that's 100 kids.
Yep. Yeah.
And imagine what they could then do from that point on. I know when I was teaching, this was way before social media, but since social media has come back in, I have had so many of my former students contact me mm-hmm. and everything else, and suddenly... You're going, oh, maybe I did make a difference.
Yeah.
In what I, you know,
of
presented.
Course you make a difference.
And of course, it also puts an awful lot of pressure on you because you realize every moment you're standing in front of that classroom, they are looking at you. Mm-hmm. And you can't let it down for
yeah.
a second.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Talk about paranoia.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting. You know, there's all kinds of things that could be said for what's wrong with society and the way it views teachers, but
yeah, well, yeah, you know, and I always said, you know, the kids can have a bad day now and then, you know, mm-hmm. teachers can never have a bad day.
Well, people just don't acknowledge, or enough people don't acknowledge that teachers are, I mean, my kids' teachers spend more time with them than I spend with them, you know.
Absolutely.
I mean, in general, because I'm a working parent, I'm, you know, Violet's been in school full time. Or daycare, you know,
since
in Montessori,
like
since she
weeks.
Was like, yeah, I mean, since she was, you know, 3 months old or yeah. whatever. I'm just like, those people are the people that are responsible for raising my kids. I have to love them and respect them and do everything I possibly can to be like,
yeah, and they,
you get a more
they hopefully are a really positive role model.
Yes, yes.
Just in the way they perform and
yeah.
act
yes.
during the day.
I have been lucky enough.
You have been
I
lucky.
Have not.
But both of your daughters started through Montessori school, which is...
Yes.
On Main Street, and that's a pretty cool thing. You know,
yes.
we're actually going to see them tomorrow.
That's true. That's why we're going to the zoo.
Yeah. Going to the zoo tomorrow. Also, just a fun factoid, I will literally be in a Disney park with both of you in this room this year.
Yes.
I will be in Disneyland with Ray in August. Uh-huh. He will be there whenever I travel to LA to go to my cousin Benny's wedding, and then we're going to spend a couple of days in the park. And Ray will be joining us,
mm-hmm.
and that's going to be super fucking cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then in October, I'm going to be in Disney World with you, Courtney.
Yes.
So, in case you didn't know, I love Disney.
I was going to say, how many times is that in the past 2 years that you've been in a Disney park?
2 years?
I'm limiting
yeah.
it just to 2 years.
Well, just, yeah, I go every year. So, yeah.
But
so,
this year you're doing, in this, like, in this
in,
month
in
period.
In 365 days, I will be in a Disney park 3 times. So I will be insane.
And that's not counting the cruise from...
Mm-mm. Yeah. No. But that is what my family does.
Yeah.
You know, and we've talked about, like, definitely as a trio, me and my mom and my dad, but now that my husband Matt is around, you know, because he's also on this ride with us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Matt goes to, I don't know if Matt ever thought that he would be spending his vacation time in his, in his 30s, like, going to Disney World with a dork of a family like mine, but I love being a dork with my mom and my dad, and every year we're like, we can go anywhere, but we want to still go to Disney.
Well... And there are reasons to go this year, too.
Yeah. I mean, there's good reasons, but it's kind of like if you drink the Kool-Aid, it's a perfect vacation. You know, my dad can keep, like, the purity of it. Me and my mom and my dad, or me and my mom and Matt can, like, get a little funky, you know, still there. Like, there's just kind of something for everyone. And I definitely believe that Disney is, its job is to not get you there once. Everyone wants to see the castle once. It's what Disney does to get you to come back 19 times,
right.
like me. That makes me be like, I have to go see it again.
Yep.
I was just watching a video about the new Tron roller coaster that they're building in the Magic Kingdom, and I'm like, I have to go back. Like, I'll be there in 2 years, you know, for the 50th anniversary. I just, It's a good vacation.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, see, I hate to say it, but I went back in the 50s.
Do you know how many times you've been to a Disney park in your life?
I would have to sit and actually count them out. For a while, Disneyland was the only one. And then, of course, Disney World opened. And that became the place everybody went to Disney World.
Well, it's just ginormous, yeah. You know.
And, you know, well, and they have, you know, with Epcot and the Animal Kingdom, you know, they have multiple places you can go down there now. But I still love going back to Disneyland, which is why I'm glad we're doing that this summer, because that's the original.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to stand
because you've never been to Disneyland.
I'm going
to
stand where Walt Disney stood, and he never stood in Orlando. Right? You
no,
know?
No.
But he never got to see... Mm-hmm. He got to see the ground being pushed, but he never got to see really
the finished product
yeah.
at all.
And he literally, his hands are everywhere in Disneyland. Mm-hmm. You know, like his finesse. I can't wait.
So
to
up
see
the
it.
Street, that's not enough.
Yeah.
Where his hands were first. No.
No.
No, that does not count.
Well, because Kansas City, for some reason, does not embrace his animation.
It's very strange,
like,
yeah.
I cannot believe that we.
We have that mural, and that's it.
Yeah, and. He really started here.
Yeah.
It's very strange.
Along with Iwerks. You know, they created Oswald.
Right.
And
yeah,
then
he
Mickey
lost.
Here.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. Mortimer.
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 Well, Mortimer is still, for those who know, Mortimer is the country cousin.
He is. Yeah.
Of Mickey.
And
he's still around.
And that is when Walt Disney knew that he had made it because he had actually, and someone, if you're listening, fact check me on this, but I'm pretty sure, because Oswald was the original drawn one.
Yes.
It was original. Then Walt Disney had to sell Oswald because he needed money. And so, like, whenever they got successful, that is when he and that company knew is because they bought back Oswald and put him back in the Disney family. Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Yeah, also, if you look at it, all you have to do is take Oswald and take his rabbit ears and squeeze him down, and it's Mickey.
Yeah, but people forget that. People are like that Oswald is a bunny. Like, he's a rabbit.
Yeah, he is a bunny.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
My husband, Matt, I've done a lot of shout-outs to him on this one. He actually has quite a lot of Oswald merchandise.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah, because he just thinks that sort of tall-eared, you know...
The, like, history part of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that history part. And it's pretty cool. So instead of having... Mickey ears, he has an Oswald set of ears.
Oswald was almost the precursor of Bugs,
mm-hmm.
you know, for a different studio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's like, I wonder what Bugs Bunny would have been like had Oswald not existed.
Mm. And, I mean, Bugs Bunny, what an interesting character. Yeah, I mean, when you look through him throughout history, you know, his cross-dressing and, like, all of the everything, he's a smart little character, Bugs Bunny.
Mm-hmm. Well, his whole... East Coast attitude,
yeah,
coming through the West Coast,
right.
You know, it was wonderful.
It's so damn cool. Yeah. Well, we're halfway through, so now it's the question and answers part.
Okay.
So, for fun, what is your definition of real magic?
Oh, okay. I should have known some of these ahead of time. Maybe that would help. Real magic, to me... I have to put it back with the kids because this is, you know, we've been talking about them anyway. But there was nothing quite like as a teacher. Now, I taught math a lot of the time. I also taught theater. But when you see that light bulb go off, that sudden moment of understanding, that's magic.
That's magic. And sometimes you turned on that light. You know, most of the time you turn on that light.
I hope I had at least a bit of influence on getting the electricity there, you know.
How did you fall into math? You know, were you just always?
I was always. I'm the only person, as far as I know, when I was in college that never changed my major. From the time I was in high school, as a senior in high school, I belonged to the Future Teachers of America, and I always wanted to be a teacher, and I always was involved in math. When I went to school in England, what would have been my sophomore and junior years in high school, I was headed for a program they called Double Math and Physics.
Wow.
And, you know, it's always been there. It's just I can't say it any other way.
Yeah, but I mean, like, because math is not even, like, a percentage in my wheelhouse. Like, it's not there. I don't get it.
Even today, I can sit there and I'll find myself sometimes counting steps. Mm-hmm. Because I know that a certain number of steps is a mile. Mm-hmm. And so I can do those for measurements or find out how long it, when I'm mowing the lawn, mm-hmm. I go, okay, this is the longest strip. How many steps? It's 41 steps. Okay.
And which,
which is stupid, I know, but it's just that number thing. And I'm always doing puzzles. Mm-hmm. Not jigsaw puzzles, although I do those all the time.
You do.
But, you know, number puzzles and logic puzzles. And mm-hmm. I love teaching geometry because it wasn't so much about numbers as it was about thought processes. Yes. And sitting down and saying, okay, here I can do this because of this step. And then that leads me to this step, which gives me two possibilities. So which way do I... It's all thought processes.
That literally just made me start sweating.
But I think that's the difference between people who do math and people who do not. I mean, I think that it's a totally different way that your brain works. I mean, like, geometry made sense to me. Algebra can take a hike.
Algebra makes perfect sense to me.
But it's because there was a visual representation. I could see it.
Well, see, and you know? I always tried to teach it with... a lot of talking, but also a lot of work on the board, because I know people learn either visually or mm-hmm. orally. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I tried to give all of that. And people always ask me, why math and drama? Those don't seem to work together. Well, one's a vacation from the other. Mm-hmm. In my math classes, I always kept the chairs fairly lined up. And, you know, everything was pretty organized, had lots of stuff on the walls for you know, those creative juices. But then you get into drama and it's an entirely different animal. And so it was giving me a chance to take a vacation from mm-hmm. myself, mm-hmm. going from one to the other during the
that
day.
That might be the title of this episode, mm-hmm. A Vacation from Myself.
That's a good one. Yeah. That's a good one. All right, let's see. You are a new addition to the crayon box. What color are you and why?
Oh, my Lord. I'm one of those crayons that they take all the bits and pieces that are left over and melt them into one crayon that you never know what color is going to come up.
Mm-hmm. It is amazing how many artists, I think, feel that they are a bunch of different flakes mm-hmm. put together.
I'm sorry. No,
it's incredible. Yeah, mm-hmm. I love it.
You can't be the same thing mm-hmm. all the time. I always taught, too, that you know you're always putting a mask on. It depends on the group you're with. You don't have the same face and mask and attitude with your parents that you do with your school friends, mm-hmm. or as you do with your best friend, mm-hmm. or as you do with a people in a bar.
Right.
You know, you are all these different people all the time. Why not admit it?
Mm-hmm. I completely and 100% agree with that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What is something that you were told you could never do or do well that you have accomplished or are in the process of accomplishing?
Be a leading man.
Okay.
I'm short.
On that.
Yeah. I'm right on top of that one. I'm short. I've always been short. And I accepted the fact long ago that I would probably be a character actor, not a leading actor, simply because of my shape and size. And even though I could out-act, out-sing, out-dance anybody else who was there at the auditions, I knew it wasn't going to happen for me. But it's happened in several cases, like I was able to play, thank heavens for shows like The Producers, where the lead, Max Bialystock, is not your typical leading man person.
You.
And so right. I was able to do that. I was able to do Harold Hill in The Music Man years ago because they happened to cast a short Marion. So they didn't run into that. Mm-hmm. And people these days are a lot more open to non-stereotypical casting.
Yeah.
That your leading man doesn't have to be a Cary Grant or a Gregory Peck.
We don't
Peck.
Type out as quickly as yeah. we used to.
No.
At all. In fact, we're almost trained now, you know, in directing ways to look beyond the types.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, I've been given those chances. Now, I know that I am, except for rare cases, I have aged past a lot of that. But it's like happens through your life. You know, you have certain roles that you would like to be able to play, but those change
as you progress through your life. Well, what's the role that you haven't got to do that you don't think you'll get to do?
that I'll ever get to do.
Yeah, the one that you're like, I'll never get to do it.
The one I always say is Mama Rose. I would love to play Mama Rose.
I want you as a Mama Rose for sure. Definitely, but I mean, let's do it in a cabaret. Like, I always just talk about that. I want to do Annie and destroy it. I want, like, Kay Noonan to be Warbucks, you know, and I want, like, I want to literally almost, like, pick it out of a hat and be like, now we're going to, you know, we've got 1 week, we're going to put on a concert version of Gypsy or Annie and make it happen.
Yeah, whatever it is. Well, I did a cabaret show for a while. It was called Roles I'll Never Be Cast In. And I did songs from music, like I did a song from Little Abner that Little Abner sings. Mm-hmm. Of course, they always cast me as Pappy or Mary and Sam, but I got to do Little Abner's. I did a couple of songs from Mama Rose. I did Mine Hair from Cabaret. Well, I'll never be Sally Bowles, but...
Do you like playing females on stage?
I do, because it's different. I like playing them not as a drag role, that's with quotes, but as a woman might play it.
Ron McGee talked a little bit about that on his episode, that he loves to play females because it gives him an opportunity, you know, sometimes to, like, be something different. And he's not mocking the female.
No. It gives you a chance to dig in and touch some of those things that you would never otherwise get a chance to approach and think about. And like I say, I like playing it as a female would play it as much as possible. As far as I know, again, I'm the only person to play a female role at the Coterie who was not doing it as a drag role. I did one of the roles I played three different roles, but I did, one of them was the nurse in 101, or the nanny in 101 Dalmatians.
You are definitely the nanny from 101.
The puppies, the puppies. But I played it as an old lady, but then later I came on as a cop and just walked across the stage. And every single show, you could see some place in the audience, the kids would start to go, oh, wait, that was the nanny. And then it would just expand through the audience. Yeah. But they didn't realize, it took me a while to figure that out, they really didn't know that I was a man when I was Nanny Cook to begin with.
I think.
And that I loved. Yeah. The fact that it's not a man dressing up as a woman. Right. It's a woman.
It's a woman. Yeah. Sorry for that tangent. I love that. Yeah.
Let's see. What are the best and worst purchases you've ever made?
Oh, my Lord. Let me come back to the best one as I think about it. One of the worst ones I got taken in, and I got purchased a thing that I was supposed to get a trip to the Bahamas out of this thing, and no, there went that money, just bye-bye. One of those scam things that went on, I just got sucked right into it. But I have to admit, it was back when I was in my late 20s, early 30s, so I was stupid. I fully admit that. As far as the best purchase, well, it's probably my first house, and then my second one. But
thanks for the invite.
Yeah, the thing with buying a house, it was a different time. People nowadays do so much moving or changing jobs. It's part of the culture, and it's not so much of a deal. When I was doing this, your whole goal in life for everybody was to have an occupation, not a job, but a career, something you were going to stay with the whole time. And I loved getting into my own house, because then if I wanted to paint the walls, I could paint the walls. If I wanted to change the carpet, I could change the carpet. It was mine. I didn't have to deal with landlords. I could give you stories about the landlords.
My husband cannot listen to this episode. Oh. We are literally in, like, a marriage discussion right now about renting versus purchasing. And it is a marriage discussion.
Well, right, I'll add my thing.
No, I love it, because I'm literally like, did you, like, listen to my conversation?
See, in December, just this past December, I have my mortgage paid off on my second house. So
congratulations.
I am paying no rent, no mortgage. Of course, I'm having to save that money for repairs.
Sure.
But, yeah.
Or going to Disneyland with me.
Or going to Disney. That money is going into my fun fund.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I'm literally living that conversation right now. Because owning a home was never on my life goal list. It could care less.
It does give you a kind of permanence that I think some people don't particularly want to have in their life. That they want the non-tether so that they can... Okay, if I want to pick up and move, I can.
Mm-hmm. My husband has to listen to the second episode. This is insane right now. I manifest in the weirdest ways.
Oh, I can give you good. Have him over sometime. I'll give you good and bad on home ownership.
Mm-hmm. What is the one thing that became more clear as you got older?
That, to put it in the teaching realm, it took me a long time to learn. No matter how hard I try, I can't reach every kid. I can do my best. I can do everything that I can possibly do, but I am not going to be able to reach every kid.
That is, yeah.
And you have to accept that.
I mean, because that's sort of a lesson in life, too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I walk through life trying to appease everyone, but I definitely am trying, I try to make sure everyone feels like they're seen or whatever, well, but some people don't want to be seen.
And not everybody is going to like you.
Yeah.
No matter what you do.
I think they're crazy.
You know, like. Well, that's true, but, you know, it's just, you can only get so far with some of this that you have to finally accept the fact, okay, I've done everything I can.
But, I mean, that is a hard lesson, you know.
Oh, it took me years to learn that.
Yeah, that's insane. Yes. Mm-hmm. My life is literally coming through you right now.
That's true. All right. You are invisible for 24 hours. What do you do with your time? And you get to, like, you can just magically appear wherever it is that you want to be.
Oh, my Lord. Because that's one of those things somebody, you know, if you had a superpower, what would it be? And invisibility is always one of the ones that pops up. I would actually... like to be around some of the discussions following an audition. And here, okay, because there have been a lot of auditions that I go on, and this is for anybody in theater can always attest to this, and I try to teach it all the time. I have a huge resume, you know, lots and lots and lots of shows, 200 shows, something that I've done. I can easily say there are four times that many that I was not cast in. And I would love to be able to sit there and listen to them and figure out why.
Right.
You know, what did I do wrong that I can fix, that I can maybe do differently? Or maybe, like I was just saying, not everybody's going to like you. Maybe there's something you can't do anything about. Okay, I was too short. Well, sorry, I can't do anything about that.
Right.
I literally got to play a role once because the costume fit me. That was it. 100%. I mean,
Mr. and Mrs. Bridge, movie that was shot here in town. I was supposed to be a bum on the street on the plaza. You know, nobody would have noticed or anything else. I got home from school one day, got a phone call. Could you come down to costuming?
Sure.
Okay, so I went down. I fit the movie usher costume, and so I was cast in every decade as the movie usher. Now, you didn't see my face all the time. You only saw my legs in one shot. We figured it was a family dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
grandfather, the father, and the son. And
some people are lawyers, some are movie ushers.
But literally, I got a named part, the movie usher,
because
and Mr. and Mrs. Bridge because the costume fit me.
And those are those things that I think a lot of people in an audition room have no... And like they would never even think that could be a reason. And I'm like, listen... I have literally not been the right person, but because those pants fit me and they didn't have to spend the money to do that, they were like, give the kid a try.
Well, see, I always love telling the Brady Bunch story to kids that are auditioning for stuff because they go, they had 12 kids cast. They had 3 blonde girls, 3 brunette girls, 3 blonde boys, and 3 brunette boys because they hadn't cast the mother and father yet. When they cast Florence Henderson and Robert Reed, well, 6 of them got thrown out the window. Because they didn't match their mother or father. And you go, well, I could dye my hair. It didn't matter. They just, why do that when we've got 3 blonde girls here? And that was why they got cast.
I loved Florence Henderson. May she rest in peace. That was a good good woman. I got...
Yes.
I had a good night with her in L.A.
Well, what was that story?
I was at that point working as the personal assistant for... I used to freelance a little bit. I still do it every once in a while. But I used to freelance for Silpata Jewelry that was out in Olathe. And the owners and CEOs needed a personal assistant, essentially, when they went to their... when they traveled... as well as when they went to, like, their big conventions. Or whatever.
Yeah.
Or, you know, all around. So we flew out to L.A. to prep everything as the, you know, as the assistant, because they had their in-town assistants that would help them, but I was, like, their traveling one. And so we were there a day early, and one of the other people I was working with, shout out to Kate Gimbelow, was, like, best friends with Florence Henderson. It was like, do you want to go out to dinner tonight? And we're all like, sure. And then we walk into the restaurant, and Florence Henderson and her daughter Barbara were just sitting there, and we literally drank and ate for about 8 hours. And it was amazing. You know, like, you're just like, because she was, we were able to talk to her about the Brady Bunch. We were able to talk to her about her, like, sexcapades. We were able to talk to her about what it was like to be on Dancing with the Stars. Like, she just had, Florence Henderson had such a gamut of a career in so many ways, and her insight, and that girl could drink. Like, I mean, it was just, but she was so kind. Like, she made sure to call Matt, he was not my husband at the time, to be like, I want to meet the person that you are claiming to love. And it was just this beautiful night.
Yeah,
she wrote a great card. You know, she reached out to me almost every year until she passed away. Afterward, she was an exceptional lady. I can't believe I got to meet her. Mm-hmm. She was really fucking cool. Mm-hmm. So, if you could invite 5 famous people to your dinner table, dead or alive, who are they?
Yeah. This could be very strange. I would love to have, okay, I'll add Ned Beatty, because he was always kind of one of my idols as far as a performer was concerned. He was not a leading man, but he could do comedy, he could do drama, and was cast in, that's what I always wanted to be. I wanted to be a working actor, to just talk to him about, you know, those kinds of things. One of the Greek playwrights, Aeschylus, Sophocles, you know, it's some of the, of course, I'd have to be able to speak Greek with them. But to see what the Greek theater really was like, we have all the historical evidence.
But we all know what that's even like in the real world when you think about
it. Yeah, but when you turn around, okay, what was it really like to be on stage with the mask and big, huge platform shoes to make you look bigger on stage? And perform in those kinds of things.
With the real God machine back then, you know.
Right, like, and how would you write
those
shows in order to do that kind of thing? To add to that, I don't know who in particular, but a performer who did Commedia dell'arte. You know, to see, because that's a whole different theater. You get a theme here that I like the theater people.
Do you like theater people? Because I have a follow-up statement after this question. No, not in a bad way. It's always, every time I think about this question,
Another one, and this one is kind of obvious, but maybe not for the obvious reasons, would be Abraham Lincoln. More to figure out what his life was like in the White House. Think about
what he was really thinking sometimes.
And how he was able to deal with people just walking in.
Yeah.
To the White, because the White House was wide open.
Yeah.
Back then, and people.
I think he's
the reason why.
Why it's maybe not so open. Yeah.
But you know, the things that really drove his reasoning for a lot of his decisions. What was he thinking about when he wrote the Gettysburg Address?
Sure.
Those kinds of things. You know, so something along that line. And let me see, somebody in the modern, well, Ned was in the modern era. Somebody today. Betty White. Sorry.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
I've worked with and met a lot of, you know, Hollywood people and New York people in my day. You know, like I say, Rue McClanahan with Annie and getting to know her. And most of them are really fantastic people. There are a couple that are assholes. Mm-hmm. But everybody is that way. But, you know, someone like Betty White, who I have at home on VHS, unfortunately, some of her Life with Elizabeth shows that she did when she was, you know, first getting started. Now, she had already done the morning shows and things, but she has had, talk about a career.
Mm-hmm. She's been a working actress for like 80 years or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's something insane. Mm-hmm.
And to be able to go through some, and talk about a love affair that she had with Alan Ludden and, mm-hmm. and her life with him and the way they were able to work out, you know, their joint careers going on, and the fact, you know, that they are really the exception in Hollywood in that they had such a long life together where mm-hmm. it seems to be anything over 10 years is amazing.
Right.
Now.
Yeah. I always love that question as we sort of wrap up, because I'm always like, those are like the five people I would want at the table, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
But then I think about, I wonder what it would be like to, say, have Betty White and Sophocles sitting next to each other. Like, I'm also just like, I almost wish I could say, well, I'm going to pick four people that are insane, and then be like, but then I want Ray there, too. So I can have someone else at the end of that to be like, wasn't that crazy? You know, I always feel like in my head when people ask that, I reserve a spot for someone right now that I can be like, you got to experience that, too. Right?
Yeah.
Can you believe that was our hour? Mm-hmm. Poof.
Oh, it has been?
Mm-hmm. There it is.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it's just...
I told you have to stop me.
Oh, yeah. We could talk for days.
Yes.
So, last two questions I have, and they're open for you. Who would you like to hear from on the couch?
Oh, my lord. Here in town.
It's everyone's stumped on it, always.
Yeah, well, it's because they're, in some case, it's too many names popped into my head that you go, okay. Mm-hmm. Actually, Mayor Sly James.
I would love to talk to Sly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Once we get our new mayor, hopefully here in about 2 weeks, mm-hmm. I will want to get both our new mayor and Sly.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I walked with him in one of the aides.
Mm-hmm.
And got to talk to him a little mm-hmm. bit because of that. And
he's an amazing man.
Yeah.
He was so open just to talk.
Oh yeah. He's fantastic.
I'm going to miss Sly James as the mayor of Kansas City, because I think he is such a model of, I think, what a mayor should be for a growing city. But I'm also kind of excited, a little bit like I was post-Obama, just to be like, I can't wait to see what Sly does. Because now he's charged, and now he knows what he wants, and now he has an even more of a name than he had before that I think that
can be. And that said, he has that name behind him now that can give him a little more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. And then if there's just anything you would like to leave our listeners with, any words of wisdom, any curse words, any new things that they like?
I could do all of those. Mm-hmm. I will just say, finally, it's something I tried to teach the kids, and I still try to whenever I work with them. Whatever opportunities are offered to you in life, grab them and try them. I try to teach kids all the time. When else will you have a chance to be a cheerleader, mm-hmm. or be in a choir, mm-hmm. or be on a sports team, or be in a show?
Jump in
or
the fountain.
Be part of the student government. Mm-hmm. You may never have that chance again. Grab it when it's there, because you never know when it's going to disappear. And you never know. You might like it and give you a whole new direction to a hobby or to your life.
You are such a teacher, Ray.
I know it.
I love it.
I know it.
This was this week's Couch Chats. Next week on the couch, we will have our friend Miko with Shots from Miko. She is a local female entrepreneur who has a alcohol business where they make custom shots. Mm-hmm. And she's pretty kick-ass. She's a friend of the asylum and a board member.
Absolutely.
Thanks for being on the show, Ray. This was so much fun.
Thank you for... I've been had.
You have been had. You look wonderful. Everyone, make sure you check out the selfie from today.
That's right.
All right. We'll talk to you all next week, okay?
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was this week's episode of Couch Chats. Thanks so much for listening. Couch Chats is available locally on KOJH 104.7 and also on iTunes. Remember, that's Couch with a K. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this episode are solely those of Couch Chats, not the Arts Asylum, KOJH, or Mutual Musicians Foundation. Thanks again for listening, and please remember to rate, review, and subscribe, as well as follow us on Instagram. Tune in next week to see who we have on the couch.